So
it's going to be about cosmology, at least that's the motivation. The word cosmological innovation. From the HRMT development. So I'll use something that I briefly tried to motivate yesterday, some new tool, to study a known topic. And I'll explain now why that's interesting, why it makes sense to do that. So anyhow, when I get to that point in the talk again, I'll mention briefly what it is for somebody who maybe didn't attend yesterday. But for now, let me just try to motivate why I'm interested in cosmology and what exciting stuff is going on. So many people have heard or not that there were new data from the Planck satellite, say around March last year. So yeah, it's about exactly a year ago. And so these are measurements. Well, it's a map of the whole sky and measurements of the temperature fluctuations. And so now, for the first time, there's enough detail known from those observations so that one can start ruling out various classes of inflationary models. So, you know, so inflationary cosmology is not just about the very early universe, but also people try to extract well, predictions about what density perturbations should look like and how they evolve, so how the large case structure is born. But then how the cosmic microwave background radiation that is mostly measured with such observations gives a good map of the sky and a good map of the fluctuations that existed before the large scale structure started growing. So there are some predictions from, so every respectable inflationary model gives some prediction for the density perturbations and some other characteristics of this, say, initial predictions issue. And now with this new data, finally, some things have been established which were before not so very clear. Like, for one thing, is that the primordial perturbations were, well, they were, okay, let me write it this way. So, the new results from those new data. One important thing is that, your piece of information is that there is no measured known Gaussianity. So I'll say one of the means. This statement is about the primordial spectrum of perturbations. So again, from the perspective of what's observed, this just means that people can measure temperature fluctuations around the sky, and well, they start correlations between different points on the sky. So one can measure two-point correlators, three-point correlators, and such. And this statement is that, well, only two-point correlators are enough to describe everything. There are no trivial three-point and whatnot. And the distribution is Gaussian of the perturbations of the temperature at that stage. So that, or at least there is a very, very strong constraint on how much it can deviate from normal Gaussianity. That restricts a lot of the inflationary models. That was not known for a while. People are trying to cook up models that produce large normal Gaussianities and whatever. So there were various kinds of things in inflationary cosmology for a long time. But now all huge classes of models that have large normal Gaussianity are ruled out already. Another. To a large degree of accuracy, the observable universe is less. So again, some inflationary models for predicting larger deviations, they're all also already ruled out. And another important thing is so-called scalar spectral index. That's some parameter that characterizes the spectral density perturbations. So so I hope it's not a bit boring, but I want to enumerate several constraints and then I'll say what it means for the allowed models that are still consistent with the data. Scalar spectral index is almost one. So this number, this scalar spectral index, is just some number of parameterizes, like I said, in the two-point correlator. So if you measure temperature in one point and temperature in another point along the sky, there is some function that gives that distribution. And this is some parameter that characterizes the function. So, okay, let's not go into details, but this is really somehow characterized by this. So there are two basic observables that people want to predict from impressionary models. One is this NS, this spectral index, and another is so-called R, this ratio of the magnitudes of basic perturbations towards magnitudes of gravity waves. Well, I'll mention that to you in a moment. So anyhow, and finally, another very important point is that there is no evidence for gravity waves yet. So there is a very huge constraint on the magnitude of the gravity waves, primordial gravity waves. Or rather, if they exist, their magnitude has to be much, much more than the density perturbations, which was not known before. That's an important constraint. Because some impressionary models were producing gravity waves that were comparable to the density perturbations as a magnitude, or order magnitude, maybe smaller, but not very, very small. Whereas now there are huge constraints allowing only very small gravitational waves. So with this new set of data, as I said, a lot of models are now ruled out, and it turns out that actually what is allowed is very restricted. Namely, by allowed I mean models that are consistent with those conclusions. So the only allowed models of inflation now, by the way, people know what is cosmological inflation, right? If anybody wants, I can mention briefly, but no, because it's a theoretical group. That is not a cosmological group, but anyhow, it's a brief period of very fast expansion in the early universe. So, so all allowed models actually are now, or only the following models are allowed. Models that are single field. First of all, before there were various complicated models that had many fields, and some notions like assisted inflation that were whole sets of huge number of fields. But okay, now it turns out that the only thing that is allowed is single field models, single scalar field that drives the inflation and expansion, with plateau-like potential. So the inflation happens when this scalar field moves in some potential, so that's this potential here. And the reason for this simplicity is exactly all those constraints. For example, if there were more than one field, there would be some significant non-Gaussianity and other deviations from this and other things. So all those things together, those new conclusions from the new data, mean that this is the only thing that for now is consistent.
You probably should throw plateau-like potential in this slide.
Yeah. So in a moment I'll mention that. I'll draw a picture of it and explain what I mean. Let me just mention that so for the moment, yeah, like I said, I'll draw a picture of that, but let me first say the following. So it would seem like this is a huge progress because now we almost singled out the kind of model that describes cosmological inflation. But actually it turns out that it's a problem. And that was pointed out quite soon after, so this was March 2013, and there was a paper already in April. And by one of the founders of the whole field of inflation, Steinker. So there are three people, I forgot the other two, but if you look up this, you'll find this Steinker and two other people. So they pointed out in that paper that actually the only kind of model that is now allowed from the data is disfavored by the inflationary paradigm itself. So that's kind of a issue that needs to be addressed. So, like I said, I'll draw a picture of that in a moment and use that picture to also explain some of the arguments of those people, but let me just make the basic statement. So the models that are referred by the data, which are those models, such models, that's the statement of this paper, are disfavored. And I'll say also what I mean by that in a moment, but for now I just state it. disfavored, and actually they call this unlikely. So they call it unlikeliness problem. So those models are unlikely. Disfavored or unlikely. Within the inflationary paradigm. Okay, so now I'll explain in more detail what this means and draw a picture. Can I raise this? Or?
Sure.
So far, any questions? Or? So you see how I'm going in the direction of trying to introduce a completely new class of models. I'm trying to explain why it's not a waste of time to use new methods with completely new class of models. I have other motivations too, but I'll mention. Is there another?
I want to ask you something. Can it be the other way that this actually this favors the inflationary paradigm?
No, no, it doesn't favor it. I'll explain a moment why it disfavors. Like I said, I have to go on there. Because for now, it's just a statement. So, well, there are many models within that paradigm. So what I want to show in a moment is that the ones that are singled out by the data are very not singled out by the theory. They're in a parameter space of the theory that is not. That's not a hard contradiction. It's just an issue of, say, fine-tuning or likeliness or something. So it's a motivation for other models, but I also give another reason why the other models would be very interesting even without that. But nevertheless, that's a motivation. Again, it's not a hard contradiction, at least yet. So one can just ignore it if one prefers that way, but it's a motivation to look at other possible models. So, So let me illustrate that with an example that also is given in that paper. So let's take this actually rather standard potential in those kind of models. So why is the scalar field? That will be the input, the proof that drives the inflationary expansion. And if you take a very simple potential of this form, there's some constant coefficient, pi squared minus pi zero squared. Where again zero is another constant squared. So the potential looks like that. Whether I can draw it well enough, but well, we understand that there are two minima, then things go to infinity, and this should be kind of flat, sort of, and symmetric, right? So maybe it won't be very symmetric, but it is pi zero minus pi zero. So the plot-like region is this region. So the inflation that is favored by the data is when the scalar, when the inflaton runs around in this region. That produces the inflationary expansion that is consistent with the observations. And now in this model, one can see various issues. So in addition to the unlikely actually that paper shows other reasons. So one important reason why there is a problem here is that so let me just mention to the unlikeliness and even more importantly. So this, the height of this barrier, it's not even vertical, sorry. Anyhow, let's point delta B. So for the magnitude of the perturbations to be consistent with the constraints from observations, the magnitude of this, is it not visible? The magnitude of this barrier has to be actually much smaller than the Planck scale. So because it's a potential, the Planck scale is actually m Planck to the fourth, right? The fourth paragraphs. So this is the Planck scale in terms of energy units. So if this potential height is larger, the amplitude of these perturbations will be larger than the observational constraints. In fact, that's even beyond constraints that some people may remember. the open constraints that were the perturbations, the vacuum perturbations should be on the order of 10 to minus 50 or so. So it should be on the order of that or less than that. That's already known for many years. So even already that constraint would be violated if it's not satisfied. So we have to have this kind of a constraint on this height, but that already implies that the gradient term in that potential would actually be dominating over the potential energy here. So the inflation is just never going to start. So that's already a problem. Inflation doesn't start in this model. Or it's very difficult to start. So okay, if it starts anywhere, we know that very fast it's going to dominate because the inflationary regions are going to become, like everything that is not inflationary will become a measure zero very soon within the whole inflating, within whole space-time. So once it starts, it's okay, but here it's a problem even to start. But even if we forget about that for a moment, the other issue that was called enlightenment is there can be illustrated in the following way. So this was the plot-like inflation, if the field is oscillating here. See this most one of the bond from the observations, plot-like inflation. But actually there's another kind of inflation in the same model that is known as power law inflation. It's if the field rolls here. So this is power law inflation. And already in this model one can see that the power law inflation is infinitely more probable than the plot like, because there's, in a very simple way, there's infinitely much more field space this way. Whereas this is a very small region, again very zero compared to the whole other region. So if the field is arbitrarily distributed in the early universe, I guess in different regions of space-time, different values, it's much more probable that it will start as power law inflation rather than as plot law. So the thing that you want from the observational constraints is actually negligible compared to what you are going to get from this model. So this is the enlightenment issue that was pointed out there. So power law inflation is much more probable or likely than the plot-like. And actually there are also other issues pointed out in that paper, but these are like the most basic, easily pointed out and memorable problems that illustrate that the traditional point of view would just weakly coupled field theoretic inflatons in a potential really has some issues that have to be resolved now that we know more about the data. So it's not like we should be happy and okay, we discovered the model, great, that's inflation. That's not the status. So now with this motivation, so again, so people might just neglect that. I don't think that people like Alan Guter, for example, happy to look for other models, but it's not a kind of contradiction yet, but it is a motivation to look at a broader context and try to explore new kinds of inflationary model building that maybe will resolve this issue, that within the new context, maybe the data will prefer something that is not unpreferred by the theory, but the other way around. So there is a motivation to look for that. So I want to explore new kinds of models that arise by using the methods that I mentioned yesterday, the methods of gauge gravity duality. So, want to study new class of inflationary models which arise from, I'll say in what way arise from gauge gravity duality. So let me just briefly mention for those who maybe did not attend yesterday or forgot, so gauge gravity duality is just a new method, a new powerful technical tool that is usually used to study strongly coupled gauge theories from some dual gravitational almost classical backgrounds that are in different number of dimensions. So that's a technical tool that allows you to rewrite one kind of problem into another. But now the way I want to use here is the following. So within this context of studying strongly coupled gauge theories, people have found various gravitational backgrounds. And I want to take a particular kind of gravitational background that was found and that I studied with some collaborators from the US for a long time in order to try to find things about some particular strong coupled gauge theory. But now, instead of using that background for that gauge theory, I want to use that background to produce a model of inflation in some way that I'll say in a moment. So, okay, so the basic idea. So I should say that people who explored in the area of string theory or gauge gravity duality, people have explored this kind of inflationary model building that I'm going to now, but not for the kinds of backgrounds that they want. They've explored things that are pretty much another way of constructing also multi-coupled field theoretic duals. Because, well, anyhow, the main difference would be that the background that I'll use here will be of a kind that is called walking backgrounds. So they are dual to gauge theories that have some, the gauge coupling as a function of the energy scale has some intermediate energy range in which it's almost constant. So the theory is not conformal, but the gauge coupling is near constant for a certain range of energies. And that kind of flatness would actually be the crucial difference between the background I want to use and everything else that was used until now in this area when people were trying to compute. Even already Silverstein and Quaver were doing some stuff about this kind of inertial model building. But they never had that kind of background. They just took ideas or something similar. And it's very crucial to get this flat region because that's what kind of gives you the slow roll that is very much preferred by the deadlines. The reason why they want plateau-like stuff is exactly concentrated in this flat region in the geometry. So the basic idea is take some gravitational background, and the only thing that has anything to do with gauge gravity duality is that the background I want to study was discovered in the gauge gravity duality as a dual to some particular strong coupled gauge theory. But I'm not going to be using it to study a gauge theory anymore, just the basic idea is take some gravitational solution. Let's take a solution, to be a bit more precise, a solution of 2B supergravity. So it solves the equations of motion of the theory, and again it was discovered in attempts to study a particular walking gauge theory. And so it has some, for the experts, it has some Ramonov flux. So it has a non-trivial metric, non-trivial dilaton, and non-trivial flux. And so then, topologically, the internal space is something like S1 times S2 times S2. So that would be the S5 in ADS, but now it's just topologically S5. Mm-hmm. But there are different warp vectors in front of everything. So it's a whole non-trivial vibration. So there is then the radial direction and the velocity 4. But the internal space is this topologically. So and everything is fibered on the radial direction with different warp vectors.
And how much super simple?
So that's with n equals non super simple. And let me mention also that since it's important for those who know, so that the gauge theory that is dual, the gauge coupling, that's the whole point about walking backgrounds. The gauge coupling depends as a function of the energy, as something like that. So in QCD it would be just like that. Whereas now there is this walking region. So for a really conformal theory, it would just always be like that. But this is not a conformal theory, and yet in some region of energy scales, it kind of mimics the behavior of conformal theory in terms of the gauge coupling. So that's why it's called walking background. So and that's the main difference compared to any other attempts so far. I want to use a walking background to build a model of inflation. And so what is done in this kind of context, even already at the level of Abel Silverstein and all other people that have tried that. So you take some background, and then you put in some probe brain. And I don't know, maybe I should say. So yesterday I mentioned what a brain is for those who don't know. But now the brain is going to be, yesterday I was mentioning about instantons, now it's not going to be instantons. So the brain will have one dimension along the time direction and the other three spatial. And so, the important thing is that you want to embed a non-supersymmetric probe brain because the motion of the brain is what drives inflation here. So if it were supersymmetric, it would just be staying wherever it is. But because it's non-supersymmetric, there is some force detect units and makes it move. So take a background, and in this case, again, the very new thing compared to all the previous models in that area is that you take a walking background and then embed a probe brain in that walking region.
And the motions that fire out are on which of the complex directions? So the brain cuts the complex space into some points? So
the brain actually moves along the radial direction.
The radial direction.
It will be some point in that space and moving around the radial direction.
The entire space is fixed?
Yeah, because now I won't describe inflation, right? Otherwise, if you fix it in the radial direction and do something else, it would be another thing, but it's not going to have anything with inflation. But because I want to describe inflation, well, I need a motion in the radial direction as a function of time.
So you have a superpotential, and that's what's responsible for creating this walk region, the sense of slowing down the
brain. Yeah, in a sense, yeah. So, let me also put that in here. And then embed. Probe D3. So these are the two basic ingredients in the model. Take a background that is some kind of a solution that I won't try to do an explicit thing because it's quite messy. But take a particular solution with angle down SUSY, to B, and embed a probe D3 in that. And actually in the walking region. I want that because I want slow roll inflation.
And the implant is just a modulus around the brain.
Yeah, the position of the brain is actually what becomes the important one.
So we live on the brain?
Yeah, so exactly. So the inflating four-dimensional space-time would be the world volume of the brain. It won't be any boundary, anything. It's just going to be the brain world volume theory. So, go here. So by the way, it's also very important to have this walking region because the old reasons why people like Silverstein and others considered such kinds of models were with probe brains moving in some backgrounds. They were that way obtaining some large gravitational waves and non-Gaussianities and things like that they thought would be interesting. But now they are ruled out by observation. So unless it's walking, it's already ruled out. The walking thing is very useful for various reasons. For the slow roll and also for not producing very large gravitational waves.
Could you ask this just a technical question, but could you just say to me what are the conditions or the fluxes that will ensure that you have this walking region? Is some sort of condition?
Well, not really condition, it's just you can see that from the metric, but since I.
So you always, no matter what the value of the flux, you always have a walking region?
For that kind of solution. So, okay. So that solution, actually maybe for you to be more illuminated, you can say the following. So that kind of solution is actually obtained, and that's how it was found by Nunes and so the same Nunes from Alexander Nunes.
Yeah.
So I forgot who were the others, I think Papadimitriou, but anyhow. This kind of solution was found just by deforming, so it can be obtained by deforming the Alexander Nunes solution. So it's in a sense it's originating again from five brains, but it's some kind of deformation that is still a solution of the equations of motion. And the nice thing before they knew about walking or whatever, the nice thing about this was what they were trying to actually do was in the Malthusian-Nunes case, the dilaton diverges as you try to go asymptotically far away, and that's a problem with the effective field theory that you want to study. You know that it's not making sense in the UV. Whereas in this deformed background, actually the dilaton goes to a constant. So that kind of regulates this infinity that was existing in Molossian Nunes. It was making it a problem for a gravity dual of an A equals 1 HT. So they were trying to study, they were trying to find a gravity dual of A equals 1 square meals. But there was this issue with the diverging dilaton. And the deformed solution is still a solution of the same system, and with A equals 1, but it has a regulated dilaton. So it's a more sensible field theory. And then one can find out that actually there is this behavior in an intermediate energy range. In an intermediate, so in the natural inequality context, it will be the radial direction. So in some radial range, actually the gauge coupling is almost constant.
This
was not obtained by trying to find a walking thing. The walking thing was discovered after the background was obtained. So I could not tell you, if we want some other background is walking, how would you find the metric? I cannot tell you that. It's kind of the other way.
One more technical question. So this internal five-dimensional space, this product of S's, the metric on that is Einstein's metric? Or it's, so you break this independently by the flux, or from any point to any point by the flux, or by the metric? It's Einstein's Sasaki, that means that we'll break it somehow because of the flux. If it's less than Einstein's Sasaki, we'll probably break it back. From any point to any point.
I don't think that it's Einstein's Sasaki. Yeah, because if it was, it could have been noted somewhere, and I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I mean, there's a theorem that if you have a column of Einstein's Sasaki, you get an equal to. Because then the column is Calabria. And then.
That's certainly not.
Away, you know, that's, just to understand how it fits with them. Okay, you
don't. I don't know, I would imagine that they just started with some arbitrary wolf factors deforming the metric and solved the equation some more.
And they don't care what it is.
Yeah, but I don't think that there is any other special symmetry because it would have been found by now. This is known for 5 years or six, so I don't think it has any other special property. Okay. It's just some messy metric.
They just have done the more general metric very well. Okay. They don't care about mass.
Well, maybe they care, but it's not easy to find, I don't know, it's just not known.
Ah.
It just looks like some nasty, messy metric, and that's all it is about it. And actually, in this region, it's kind of becoming better, so we're the first people that did anything analytic, because otherwise people are just numerically studying whatever, but we noticed that if you just restrict to this region, things kind of simplify, you can handle it analytically. So mostly what we studied is just the working part. So I don't know, maybe you have to look at the whole thing generically to be able to figure out some interesting whole properties, but we can not do that.
Okay.
So, okay. Okay, so again, I was mentioning that you want to invert a tree probe, and let me say why go for people like really it's obvious that anyway, because the DB has four one of four directions, right? So we want to study a four-dimensional theory. So the inflating Minkowski space-time would be the world one, so otherwise if we take a higher brain, it's going to be higher dimensional. So we want four one of four directions. And also just in case anybody else is wondering, the probe thing just means that we are neglecting the back reaction of the probe of the brain on the joint. Because that's really a technical constraint, because it's also used in gauge artificiality when one puts in probe brains to introduce flavor, because it's just not possible to solve the equations, the programming equations in motion, with a whole full intersecting brain system. So there is really no exact solution known for any of those. There are some approximations sometimes for some things, but mostly people just neglect the back reaction, and that's allowed because the brains that are sources at the background, they're main, it's a huge stack. Whereas the probe is usually either one or a very small number. So that restriction between a small number of probes is so that you can neglect the back reaction. It's consistent with neglected as long as it's a small number of probes. If you put in the number of probes that is comparable to the number of the brains that source the background, then it's not consistent anymore to neglect it. And in that case, you just don't have the solution. So that's a main technical restriction.
So the flux created by seeing the brain is much smaller than the number of
probes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, because you know more, let me say also that that's also the reason why our walking theories are actually kind of very different from the field theoretic walking that people studied in the old days when they were talking about Technicolor and whatnot. Because in their cases, they were actually studying field theories, walking field theories in which the number of colors was comparable to the number of flavors. Because they were obtaining walking by studying the beta function and seeing when it goes to zero, and there was some constraint that puts some number here. I don't remember the number, which is an order one. So the number of colors and flavors have to be almost equal up to some order one thing in order to get a walking theory. The beta function will be zero in some regions. That was this Banks-Zaks fixed point or something. But in our case, that's actually not true because the number of colors comes from the brains that source the background and the flavors come from the probes that we input. So we always have this constraint. So the walking models that we have actually are a completely new class that has nothing to do with that. It's a different class of walking theories. So, yeah, so that's a comment about the other studies that we were doing of those gravity backgrounds, using them as a tool to study properties of a strongly coupled gauge theory. So the strongly coupled gauge theories we studied are actually a different class compared to the most few theories we were doing in, I don't know, 70s, 80s, whatever. Some time ago, when they were trying to study dynamical mass generation. So actually we've shown that you can also get dynamical mass generation, but it's a completely new class, not in that kind of class. And for that, there is no known gravity dual yet, because it's not possible to solve the intersecting brain system, the equations of motion for that, for comparable numbers. So back here, so now we had a D3 probe in that background, and again, the inflating four-dimensional space-time will be the most boring. It's the world boring of the D3. So, in order to be a little bit more precise, let me just introduce the coordinates for the whole space-time. So we're in 10 dimensions because it's a string theoretic consideration. So the background metric has 10 coordinates. So let me just introduce some notation for that. So x mu will be this four-dimensional space-time. So this is, and rho is the radial direction. This is 4D. And then there are some angular variables. I was denoted by phi. The new problem, sorry. So this is let's call it through this now. There's some angular variable along those spheres there. In the much simpler case of ADS5 times S5, which is what people usually know by ADS-CFT, that would be the ADS5 and that would be S5. But now it's just logically, it's actually metrically very different. So, and these are the coordinates on the world volume of the D3. Or rather, the embedding of the D3 will be such that those will be world volume coordinates, and that will be the inflating space-time. So, let me mention a little bit about the embedding.
Inflation starts with the brain at rho equal 0 and then the brain moves to rho equal infinity. Yes.
So, so the embedding. Let me just a little bit mention about the embedding. So the world volume is denoted by a single force and four dimensional surface. Well, these are really the coordinates x mu, like I said. It is just a point in all those circular directions. And also, this is an embedding ansatz that we put in and we want to study. Also, we take an ansatz that the position of the brain in the radial direction is now a function of time. So here, these coordinates are x mu are time and three spatial directions. So we take this ansatz because we want to study how the brain moves in the radial direction as a function of time. And like I said, this D3 moves because it's not supersymmetric, so there is a force due to force or rather due to being non-Susi. So we are taking a non-Susi embedding. It's known what constraints approach should satisfy so that it would be supersymmetrically embedded, so now we're taking explicitly non-that. That's something that violates those constraints. So again, otherwise it would not be an impression model, maybe a model for something else. Now we want to study a motion of the brain, so we take a non-supersymmetric embedding, and that's what that's allowed. And so now the inflaton is the position along, well, is the position of the brain, the radial position of the brain. Our radial direction, maybe we should call it, brain or something. That's not the space-time radial direction, but the position of the brain in the radial direction. Position along radial. And in fact, one can see that this motion of the brain back reacts on the Wilborn metric in the way of creating like a Friedman-Robertson-Walker metric on the Wilborn. So the inflating metric is the Wilborn metric. And again, this inflating metric occurs as a back reaction to the motion. One starts with a particular metric and a particular embedding. You know that the brain is described just by the regular DBI action, Dirac-Kolb input. So we can plug in, compute the induced metric from the background on the world volume and plug in the embedding, and we get some action that describes the brain. So, okay, let me just sketch this. I'm not going to technical stuff. I'm just trying to get it. There's a string yield on here. And this induced metric. The metric is induced on the world volume from the background metric. And there is some chance around the story. So one can compute this explicitly, starting from the background metric and the embedding. And then one obtains something. So I won't go into any details, let me just mention that. So anyhow, from this one gets a Lagrangian for, so here the field is this rho of t. One gets a Lagrangian that contains some potential, that is some term here, that doesn't have derivatives, doesn't have a kinetic term. So there will be a kinetic term in something like rho dot square, and there will be another term, the same coefficient, another coefficient, and a term just containing rho of t. Now, rho dot was the position of along the radial direction is our inflaton, and so we can just read off this term. So we obtain a potential for this inflaton. So that's how we end up with an inflationary model. We have an inflaton and we have a potential and we can study it. And I guess I should have said in the beginning that it's still a work in progress, so I'm not going to describe much of the potential yet. We're still working on some things. But let me mention actually an important issue that is not clear from the very beginning, but once one gets to the point of obtaining the potential, it becomes clear that actually one needed to do something to the background before starting that. So it turns out that the string duoton. So ultimately, we are going to use a background that is also a deformation of the deformed background. And it's still a circuit of the same type to B with n plus 1 supersymmetry, but it's more complicated in terms of the fluxes. And so the string duoton was constant in the locking region in the original solution. And it turns out that in that case, the potential is just zero. So to actually have a sensible inflationary model, you need a modified background. And in that, the model is sensible inflationary model. So I don't want to be disappointed that there's no model here, there is, but this is a technical quirk that one cannot understand from the beginning until one gets to this point. So it wasn't clear why one would do it initially. We didn't think it was necessary, but then modified background. And the modified background, I was thinking of writing at least some one metric, but probably there's really no time. But then also the background metric, the modified background is obtained the following way. There's a paper by Senna and Martelli which explains.
You can have P1 more than if it's nice. You can have them on the test.
I guess it gets too technical now, so let me just mention conceptually what's going on.
Yeah.
I got the precise number, but it's the only paper by them in 2009, so if anybody's interested. Mm-hmm. So it's a paper by Molasena and Martelli, which explains actually a solution generating technique for type 2B. Which is really utilizing some kind of duality, starting with one solution and then going through several transformations that are mostly T and S duality. So it's basically going to type 2A and then to M theory and then through some other channel going back to 2A and then again T duality back to T2B. So it's a solution generating technique for type 2B string theory or type 2B supergravity theory because we're just using supergravity solutions. Solution generating technique. For 2B. So it turns out that we need to take, it's really a duality. Chain of T and S duality. So it turns out that we actually need to do this kind of a transformation on the original background that was found by Nunes and Papadimitriou. And then in the transformed background, then we can embed this D3 probe and then obtain a sensible potential and get an inflationary model.
In the transformed background, it still has a constant, you know?
No, now in the transformed case, there is a function that produces the potential.
But is it functional? So the real is not functional?
No, no. In the transformed background, the string duoton is not a constant, and there are more fluxes compared to the original one. There is also NS flux generated. The original background didn't have NS flux, just a Ramon 3 form and the non-trivial metric in duoton. But in the transformed background, everything is turned on.
So you do this, you start with the original thing, with, before you put the probe, you do this duality?
So yeah, so in fact you should start with the original thing, you dualize, and only then put the probe in the dualized background.
To any question.
Yeah.
So if I understand correctly, before you put the probe, the result of this duality is some sort of S theory solution. Because you have a very
dynamic.
Yeah. So, okay, I should be able to understand the sum, meaning the sum S theory solution.
I think so. Although we cannot try to describe that way, but of course we need.
Okay.
So indeed, the sensible model is obtained that way. First, you dualize the original background, and then put the probe in the u-dualized background. The u-dualized background still has this working region. It's just that everything else is more complicated. The background itself is more complicated, but still a working background. And in that working background, you embed the probe in the working region, And then you end up with a sensical inflection potential when you can study inflection. So that's the model so far. And okay, I don't think there's much point in writing metric or whatever. But so okay, let me just mention that. So here that generates non-trivial Diodon profile. And Diodon is the string Diodon. It's not an iteration. So this is the string Diodon that enters the deviation.
So
and in this non-trivial profile actually generates a non-vanishing interaction potential.
So this is actually rather subtle, because if I didn't have the probe, your duality would be an exact symmetry.
Yeah.
Right? So it should really be the same. But because I put the probe, I cannot follow the duality because it's not corresponding anymore.
Yeah,
so that actually
exactly.
The subtle difference.
Exactly. It's a very cool thing, so you get a new...
Very nice. Yeah.
So... Okay, so let me just mention conceptually why I think this will be very interesting, even if one doesn't care about any unlikeliness issue, because there is one property that I expect would be a consequence of this model that is not is completely out of what the previous models were doing. So that the purely filteretic models and other gravity models that didn't have walking, they either produce no gravitational waves, or very large ones, meaning comparable to the magnitude of density perturbations. So the current observations rule out the large ones, and then one is left with just prediction of no waves. Whereas this model is the unique kind of model that can predict gravity waves that are not large, but are not zero. Something that still may be observed in 5 years or 10 years. So it's a completely new prediction that cannot be made by any other model. And the reason is, so just kind of heuristically, the reasons for those things were in the, so this is from the plateau-like models. There is no waves because the scalar field rolls around zero. So it's a very small thing, so it doesn't produce anything. Whereas the large waves were produced because in those models, the scalar field has to run around Planck scale regions in field space to generate inflation. And that's why it was also producing gravitational waves in addition to density perturbations. So these were either zero or Planck scale. Whereas in this model, because this walking region that I was mentioning about the gauge coupling, which is actually a property of the metric, this walking region is something finite, so it doesn't go to zero, it doesn't go to infinity. It's something finite, so we can produce some finite non-zero magnitude of waves, which is not Planck scale. So this is a completely new kind of prediction that will be characteristic just for these models. So for the moment, I cannot say exactly what it should be, because we cannot finish the whole computation, but this is, I think, maybe even larger motivation than the unlikeliness issue. Because the unlikeliness issue is maybe a matter of taste, maybe you don't care about it, but this will be a new kind of prediction from these kind of class of models.
When you say the unique class of models that
the unique, I mean because of the walking region.
But unique means the only known one.
Yeah, because until now, all the known ones were, like I said, either producing zero waves or large waves.
Unique,
so this will be
the only known one.
The only kind of inflationary model that would predict something in between
okay.
would be this kind of model.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first attempt, this walking background. But again, it's not finished yet, so I cannot predict what it should be. And whether it will be observed in the next 5 years or next 50 or whatever, I cannot say. But it's just conceptually, it's somewhere in between. And that's the unique thing that was not happening before in all the other known models.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so that's it. I think it's it.